Welcome to episode 203 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Dave Harris about his journey into the world of esports.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here is your host, who is looking forward to meeting you in Philadelphia, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to Sports Geek. You can find me on most social media channels at Sean Callanan, at Sports Geek. And if you wish, you can send me a tweet on either of those channels, or you can message me on the Sports Geek Nation Slack community, or you can use the old-fashioned method of emailing Sean at sportsgeekhq.com. Or who knows, you might even try to call me, which you can do. Set up a call. I'm always happy to talk to podcast listeners. You can simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/work. As DJ Joel said there in the opener, I am looking forward to meeting people in Philadelphia. I'll be there for Podcast Movement After Seat. So this episode's coming out when it's coming out. And this week I'll be traveling to Dallas for Seat Dallas. Looking forward to it. First time I went to Seat was in 2011. So this will be my eighth Seat conference, and I think it'll be my third, maybe even fourth Podcast Movement. I'll probably have to check the catalogs. I think it might be third. And catch up with a couple of my podcast friends and sort of look at the latest in the podcasting community. So I will be in Philadelphia, and stay tuned to the end of the podcast. I'm going to announce some meetup dates and try to organize some meetups while I'm in Philadelphia and New York. I'm really happy to catch up with Dave Harris, the MD of Guinevere Capital, about his journey from in the world of sports, starting on the performance side, and then moving into the consulting space, and then making the leap, making the big leap out of traditional sport and into the world of esports. And so it's been a really interesting journey. It was good to catch up with Dave at the Esports High Performance Center, based at the Moore Park Precinct, right next to Allianz Stadium and the SCG. Yeah, it was good to catch up with him recently and discuss how the esports industry overall, especially here in Australia, has changed, and how that is sort of reflected in the growth and the buzz that is happening internationally. So here is my chat with Dave Harris from Guinevere Capital and the Direwolves. Very happy to be here in Sydney at the Esports High Performance Centre, just next to Allianz Stadium, home of the Direwolves. I'm here with the Managing Director of Guinevere Capital, Dave Harris. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
So here we are in the new facility for the Direwolves, and there's a sort of seen the guys training at the back. But before we get into the Direwolves and where you are now, I always like to sort of go back, find out people's how they got here. Esports is always one where people, you know, they're trying to find their way in the space, try to figure it out. How did you just get into sports overall? Where did your sports biz career start?
I've got a very mixed background. I think in esports is interesting because people come at it from many different angles, but yep. My background's in traditional sport. So, I was actually originally a sports physio, so I worked with the AFL teams, the old National Soccer League. My first big break was working with the Sri Lankan cricket team, so yep. I worked in Sri Lanka for a year and a half. And then after that, I had 11 years in Europe where I worked in Football League, Premier League football, county cricket, rugby. But I'd sort of got to the point in my career where I'd done everything I wanted to in sports medicine, but saw many things that could be done better in the in sports business. So yep. I did the MBA program at Oxford while I was over there, and then moved into the traditional sports space. On the business side, I worked with a number of organisations consulting. Once I moved back to Australia, Gemba, some traditional consulting with a Boston Consulting Group.
Yep.
But then my last real job, in inverted commas, I was a general manager at National Rugby League. I was there for 2.5 years and
And so that was in the fan member strategy sort of piece?
Yeah, marketing, content, digital, but very much a lot of the clubs facing the club facing roles. I sort of got to a point in my career where I was telling clubs what they should be doing, and I thought it was time to put money where my mouth was. And so I left 2 years ago now to start Guinevere Capital, which was a sports investment business looking to invest in sports teams and hopefully sort of become a best practice example. And our model back then and still is to work closely with the governing bodies to grow the pie for everyone in Australia, but at the same time sort of create sort of the top team.
And yeah, I mean, when it first, so I think we met probably when you were at Gemba and then you're in a role. And then I saw that you'd started Guinevere Capital as effectively sports VC, effectively. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the people who don't know the Australian market, there's not a lot of privately owned sports franchises. A lot of it is, you know, member-based, non-for-profits. So it's not the same as, you know, the US and European football teams that are owned by, you know, either groups or ownership groups or, you know, billionaires, that kind of thing. There's not a lot of private ownership in the Australian sports landscape, is there?
That's right. And it's a strength and a weakness. I think the member-based philosophy is fantastic, where fans feel they have ownership and a say in the club. But I guess from a sports business point of view, you see the governance challenges where you're getting governed by a committee and a fan base. And to be honest, most of the most successful sports franchises, from my point of view, actually have that benevolent dictator on the top to an extent, because it allows you to actually think longer term and actually step back from the day-to-day performance of the team, which is where the passion is, to actually look at the bigger picture, which I'm sure you'd work in that space.
So when you started, like, you know, I tell the story of I started Sports Geek, thought it was this and became something else. So when you started Guinevere Capital in that Australian landscape, and you're obviously looking in Australia and potentially globally and that kind of thing, what were you looking for? Was it just lots of conversations and trying to figure out where the different places were, or?
Yeah, we dive straight in and we're wheeling dealing on some fairly big traditional Australian sports team assets. But the first deal we actually got across the line was LG Direwolves in the esports space. And esports have been on my radar for a while. And as we all know, traditional sports is ridiculously congested and competitive in Australia. So we sort of pretty quickly came to the decision, why fight the tide in traditional sports? We can surf the wave of esports. And at the time, we were the first external group to buy into esports, but we just saw what was happening everywhere else in the world. And the esports is on this huge growth trajectory, but different regions are at different stages of that journey. We see what's happening in the US, Europe, other regions. We didn't think Australia was going to go on a different tangent. And 2 years later, we're proven right. It was a bit of a leap of faith back then, but we've pivoted all in on esports now. And it's just an exciting space to be in. I see it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. I always say, I think UFC is about the only thing in the last 30, 40 years has come out of nowhere to become a multi-billion-dollar industry in this space.
So I mean, it was at that time where there was people, there was a lot of the, what is esports? Isn't it esports? Is it a sport? All of that stuff to go from, you know, what are the opportunities in the space? So the first purchase was the LG Direwolves, which are, take us through, I guess, how that happened and what that team is involved in.
So esports is like sports, I guess. There's cricket, there's tennis, there's football in esports, there's League of Legends, there's Overwatch, there's Call of Duty. So from our point of view, Riot Games and League of Legends is the biggest game in the world, and Riot are very vertically integrated as far as they publish the game, they make the game, but they control the esports and the ecosystem underneath it end-to-end. And from our point of view, there's probably more analogous to the traditional sports space, and we try and apply the traditional sports model to esports. So we started actually working with Riot Games up at the top and worked top down. So we thought they were publishers we really wanted to work with, and we've still got a very good strategic partnership with them.
And so that's we've spoken to Daniel Ringland before at the he's at Riot. So as you said, they own the whole ecosystem, and I think that's one of the first, you know, when you're doing the esports explainer, like trying to explain the Riot That you know how they the whole ecosystem. It's a bit like you know the NBA owning the ball and the court and the arenas. It's that's the bit that's a little bit of a mind shift for a lot of people coming from traditional sports.
That's right. So so having worked out we wanted to invest in League of Legends, we went around and met a number of the owners. And esports used to be English Premier League run by 20-year-old footballers because these are all young players, yep. Entrepreneurial, right place, right time, started their own team. So we decided to go with Nathan Mott, who's a young, very focused young man, and soon after Curtis, who's now our coach. We decided to back them and invest in the Direwolves, who are a perennially third place team at the time.
Yep.
I think the great thing about Nathan is he wasn't just focused on the performance in the game. He actually saw the bigger picture as far as what esports could become,
yep.
and shared our vision. So, we invested with the Direwolves, and the rest has been history. Since then we've won three titles in a row and have sort of, I guess, become that dominant team on the performance side. But outside of that, everyone's working together, not just us, but with the leagues, the other teams, to really try and grow the commercial ecosystem around esports, which is growing rapidly, but it's still in the very embryonic stages.
So, so early on, you pretty much got the team, moved them to Sydney, you housed them, you started providing similar stuff when we spoke to Nigel Smart at the Crows around bringing that high performance, bringing that side of the equation. How much do you think that's been a big part of what you've done at the Direwolves?
It's been a huge part. I think initially we followed the Korean model, which was a gaming house model. So you visited us at a gaming house in Piermont last year.
Yep.
At an amazing apartment overlooking Sydney Harbour Bridge. It was wasted because they always dropped the blinds to cut out the glare. But that was all – part of it was just sort of building a narrative around these guys that it is a bit of a rock star lifestyle, something to very aspirational, I guess, getting in a nice area, a nice apartment with the infrastructure around to train full-time professionally, which is a great starting point. But since then, we feel like there was an opportunity to get a lot more scientific. We've been dominating domestically, but internationally we're still getting tailed up. And it's a game of numbers trying to compete against the Koreans and the Chinese. They've obviously got just a lot more people playing the game, so some really good talent does bubble to the top. But we wanted to be a bit more strategic about developing talent. So we felt it was actually important to separate the living and the working environment. There aren't any other traditional sports where everyone lives, works and trains together 24/7. In fact, it's a reality TV model to try and create conflict to get some good footage. So we've been in conversations with Sydney Cricket Ground Trust for a while and they've been incredibly supportive of what we're trying to do. And they've been really generous last year, giving us space built in the side of Allianz Stadium above the members area. And now we're sitting in the former New South Wales Waratahs building, which I always say is quite symbolic of out with the old, in with the new, as far as this is a much bigger facility dedicated full-time to esports, not just to Direwolves. They are a cornerstone tenant, but so dedicated to growing the entire Australian ecosystem.
And so, you know, this is a shell that you're hoping to build out. Like, it's partly, you know, meeting rooms for tactics, that kind of thing. There's a players area. What's the vision for this space?
So, yeah, as you can see, we're about half finished at the moment. Yeah. I think a lot of it is actually to get the players into different mindsets for compartmentalising the day. So when you're in team house, you're training, but then you're sitting on the couch and are you reviewing your VODs or are you playing on your phone? And it's very hard to differentiate when you're switched on and switched off, whereas here they'll have their team meeting in the morning in the conference room, then they'll move into the scrim rooms where they'll be training. If they're streaming, they'll be in a streaming room. If they're reviewing VODs, they'll be in the VOD review room. If they're chilling out, they'll be down the kitchen on the couches.
Yep.
So it's actually trying to bring that level of professionalism and helping them switch on, switch off by being in the being
mentally in the space.
Mentally in that space. Yeah. Which is a challenge when you're a one stop shop of a gaming house. So we've got the UTS Sports Science Room. So we've got an academic industry collaboration with University of Technology Sydney. We have some of the only people in the world doing their PhDs in esports. So it's great to be able to sort of have all these resources in the one space to leverage.
So other than a few words that people might not have understood, like scrims and VODs and things like that, it sounds exactly like a professional sports outfit in that, you know, they've got different parts of the facility, you know, their gym, they're doing their floor work, they're doing stretching here, they've got their meeting rooms. And I think that that's obviously something that you want to sort of drive to sort of lift the professionalism of esports as an industry.
Definitely, definitely. And I think it keeps showing we've basically won everything with the teams we've put in. And it's not about five players. We've taken over a third or a fourth place team. It's about the infrastructure and the support staff you put around them. Like people say, what's the key position in League of Legends? And they may say jungler or mid laner. The actual answer is the coach and the performance directors. It's actually getting the right people in those roles and be able to coach those people to coach other people, because the industry is so young at the moment that we have a lot of former pros coming out to become coaches, but they're still very young, and it's how you can actually help them create the right environment for a sporting team or an esports team, and obviously facilities like this help them do that.
Yeah, I mean, because the idea of, I guess, the age of the coaches, because the players are young to start with, but then, when the coaches are of a young age, they haven't had 10 years, 15 years playing, being in a professional environment, and then, you know, other learnings, whether they're going to different schools or whatever. So, yeah, you've got to somehow fast track that kind of thing. So it does lend itself to, you know, a really good coach can make a really big difference.
That's right. And there's so many things, like in traditional sports, you're looking for that 1%, whereas in esports, there's so many things that aren't being done yet that could be the growth rate. The evolution is huge on every factor. It's not just the ratings, viewership. It's actually the professionalism within the game. And now there's so much money coming into it, and the big traditional sports teams backing esports internationally as well as in Australia. There's a bit of an arms race to actually apply these pieces, where in traditional sports it's very hard to go from zero to world champion, but that window of opportunity is closing, but it's still possible for us to close the gap on those guys that are well out ahead at the moment.
And it's very much the same as traditional sport. If someone's doing something well, everyone goes, well, we better follow, better follow the leader. That definitely happens in the space. You talked a little bit about the new entrants in the market. So like you said, you were one of the first outside investors into League of Legends in Australia, at least. But since then, we've seen a lot of activity. Obviously, spoken to the Crows, Essendon Football Club are also into the space. There's agencies. So what's it been like being part of the ecosystem as that new money and new ideas and new ambitions that have come into the market? How has that changed the landscape?
It's been fantastic. It's been a really exciting period, and like we're trying to bring in as many of those professional players. Like, we don't see the Adelaide Crows as competitors. Obviously, on the field we are competing, but I was sitting down with Nigel Smart during the week. It's we're all working together to try and grow this pie. It's definitely not worth fighting over at the moment. And it was actually when I was at the National Rugby League, that was one of our sayings: we want all the clubs to compete on the field but collaborate off it.
Yep.
And this is a chance to grow the industry together. And I always say, in traditional sports, you do anything to start again. This is our chance to get things right from the start. So, it's been great having groups like the Crows and the Bombers come in. I think 7 of the 8 Oceanic Pro League of Legends teams have been bought out by people with traditional sport and entertainment interests, and the final 8th one, I hear, a deal's been done as well. So it's great to have that ownership group that can help work with the league to grow it in obviously League of Legends, which is a starting point, but now we're doing the same in Blizzard, with Blizzard through our Overwatch.
Yep.
And again, I think it's a chance to roll a good model across multiple games and really try and build the entire local scene.
And, you know, one of the things that, you know, you said coming to the esports space is, how do we apply the traditional sports to the ecosystem? And, you know, that's what I see the opportunity is. And, you know, you coming from, you know, membership and member insights and the stuff that you've done in the NRL, it's like, well, how do we make people Die Wolves members and that kind of thing? How's that been accepted by your fan group and I guess the fans that are out there?
Yeah, so we believe we've got the first membership program in all of esports. And just like everything, there's a lot of test and learn. We have a good pilot program in place. We've got over 100 hardcore members who actually have helped us build the program.
Yep.
it was very much pilot mode last year, but they've helped set up the Discord groups, the Facebook groups, etc. I think esports can learn a lot of stuff from traditional sports, but at the same time, esports at the forefront of a lot of things that traditional sports are also going to have to follow.
In what way?
So I think they're at the cusp of the transition from traditional broadcast into digital.
Yeah.
And just the ways to commercialize that. So traditional sports still in the exclusive deals for content, paywalls, but with all the cable cutting and decreasing traditional ad revenue, they're going to have to pivot their model at some stage. My belief is the last of the mega deals have been done for most sports.
Yep.
English Premier League, et cetera, probably was going to fight on for a while yet. But I think everyone's going to have to move to that model of maximizing reach and then commercializing that reach in other ways rather than the traditional means.
Taking the big check from the broadcaster.
Yeah. And effectively choking down your reach by doing exclusive deals. I think it's actually managing to trying to aggregate as many eyeballs across the world as possible and then finding the right way to add value to both those eyeballs but also the partners at the same time. And millennials are just very cynical and not interested in the old model. Esports is sort of like the test ground for that millennial market, and those millennials are going to be your older generations in the year to come, and I don't think they're going to change from where they are now.
And they are consuming their sport or their entertainment in a completely different manner than the previous generations. Mm. We're seeing the deep engagement that esports is getting in Twitch and the long watch times, yeah, and how deeply they engage, yeah, they are, and the fact that they're both watching and engaging. Yeah. There's no first, second screen, they're merged. Mm. And that kind of piece is one, it's sort of what traditional sports are looking at and quizzically and not quite sure how to do it. I mean, I think things like, the NBA doing its own esports league can help them test the market with that kind of space. Whether it translates or not, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's sort of funny but sort of frustrating when people ask, are you on real TV? Whereas, like, everyone's got smart TVs these days. It's either you're hitting TV and Channel 9 or you're hitting YouTube and Riot Games. It's not that different. And just like it's a big thing when we're in a real newspaper, which has happened quite regularly now. But
yep,
if you look at our fan base, they're not there. None of them are on traditional TV or reading a traditional newspaper. But unfortunately, our sponsors are there. So when you get that visibility there and trying to convince a 50-year-old marketing manager to sign a check.
That's the other part of the equation is that, how do you convert the buzz that is around esports to a market that the people you have to sell to that don't understand that piece. So it is a bit of, we've got to do the traditional PR piece of making sure they know about this, but really all of our key numbers and the people that want to reach are over here.
Yeah, and esports is a mass disruptor, which is a challenge in some ways. As far as you look at your, people need to really stick their neck out to get involved. And there's actually active resistance in some places. I know when you go to media valuation agencies and people are getting their clips off, traditional advertising or billboards or whatever. Yep. At the moment, they're getting disintermediated by groups like Twitch, etc. And even beyond that, I guess the teams are now going directly to the brands and integrating the brands into the content. There's no sort of, everyone's using ad blockers. There's not that market around the outside. So,
yeah.
But at the same time, esports is really hard to measure. Again, it's a different model. It's not about viewer hours and logo spotting. It's about engagement, etc. So I think Nielsen is starting to do a bit of work in this space. I understand Gemba with Turnstile, but no one's really cracked the formula of how to measure esports or how to value esports properties at the moment. So there is that leap of faith at the moment, which needs an internal advocate within the brands to really push for. No one wants to be first, but no one wants to be last.
Yeah.
We're in that sort of middle ground at the moment where a few brands are starting to dip their toes in, but I think the floodgates are going to open soon.
And how much do you think, I think when we first caught up and, when we spoke to Daniel at Riot, they sort of pulled away from events, mm-hmm, poured all their money into the studio and went a lot on their digital broadcasts, and now we're seeing the event piece start coming back and really bubble along in the esports space, especially in Australia. How do you think that's going to help? Because it's, you know, you can feel and touch it and see the excitement.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges. And if you look at the pure numbers, I think the Intel Extreme Masters out at QS Bank Arena a few months is a great example. I think they had 21,000 people there across the weekend, but they had 8 million people watching online. So realistically, the crowd's just the window dressing, but that crowd actually made the event as far as it had the atmosphere and made it seem a real thing. And it doesn't matter how much you try to tell people about it, they can't get their head around someone sitting in a stadium watching people play computer games until you actually go along to one of these events. And it's a shared experience. It doesn't matter they're playing Tiddlywinks basketball or League of Legends in the middle ground, and they're cheering and
I still think it's funny when people say, you know, have that, oh, why are people watching? I'm like, you are watching grown men kick around a round ball.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, like if you boil it down to that, it's like, oh, why are we? Yeah. And so it's just an entertainment thing, and it's what works. And I think, the event piece and the fact that, you know, more events are, you know, being more accessible, like, you know, there's obviously fervor for the tickets, but then putting on the event and the excitement of the event, you know, for the, you know, again, you can't do air quotes when you're on a podcast, but I'm going to, you know, the traditional sports fan or the sponsor in this case, they know what it's like to be at a big, you know, NRL game or a big AFL game or whatever. If they see that translation starts happening, but it's as much the 99% of the people who aren't there that are watching online is the massive opportunity.
That's right. But I think it's important to get the key stakeholders in. So the Melbourne Esports Open later this year is obviously going to be a huge for the industry in general. And the fact that Victorian State Government have come in, is in any sports, the key is actually getting the tourism dollar competing. So I think to make these big events sustainable, it does need backing and underwriting. And it's great that Victorian Government have come in for that. And obviously got some pretty big groups like TEG and ESL involved as well, and the two major publishers holding their finals there. It's going to be a huge event. And again, AFL getting more involved in the space as well, and the fact that it's positioned in between the home and away and the finals. It's I think it's all set up to be another one of those pinnacle moments that's going to lead to a step change.
Yeah, and it will get, you know, because it will be in real life, there will, you know, reporters will be able to be there. It will get that mainstream press angle, and then just having people going, oh, I went to a game to see what it's like. It does feel like that is going to be, you know, a tipping point, or, you know, take it to the next level. So for the people who don't know much about the Esports Open, who's going to be playing, what kind of games are going to be playing, who would they be seeing there?
So the main organizer is ESL. So Nick Vanzetti's managing director there, and he's working quite closely with TEG. So that's the partnership that put together the Intel Extreme Masters, which up until now has been the biggest event in Australia out at Qdos Bank Arena. It's going to be replicating almost the Australian Open in that there's going to be a lot of community areas and stuff happening around the outside, and then there's effectively a centre court with Rod Laver Arena.
Yep.
And so on the Saturday, it's going to be the finals of the Overwatch League.
Yep.
And on Sunday, it's going to be the finals of the League of Legends League. So hopefully we don't choke, because we've got the defending champions in both, the Sydney Drop Bears and LG Direwolves. But I think it's going to be that mass stadium event on the inside. But it's also going to be cool for the general punter outside. So there's going to be a lot of different publishers and games are going to have stands and activations. So it's a combination of that festival feel as well as actually having the centre court experience.
But like you just said there, the fact it's going to be Overwatch and League of Legends, it's a bit like, you know, going to a doubleheader of an AFL and NRL grand final.
Exactly. They are the two big games at the moment in the domestic markets. So, yeah, it's quite exciting.
Yeah. So, I mean, so now that you've got, you've been in, you're coming up on 2 years into the esports space, you've seen extra, you know, brands and different partners come in, and, you know, we sort of touched on the international scene, and you've talked about, you know, world championships, and it's always one of the ones that I explain to people that I said, you know, I can have a basketball team here in the NBL, but we're never playing off in a championship against the Warriors, right? And because they've got the title and they're in a different league.
Yep. But
in esports, those kind of things are potentially possible, aren't they?
That's right, and that's the exciting thing. Last year in the World Championships in China, we played against Cloud9, which is one of the biggest teams in the world. I think they raised capital recently on $140 million valuation, which we're not at the moment, unfortunately. But it's just exciting to be able to have that pathway through to play with the top teams, and the viewership of these things are just phenomenal. Like the recent tournament we were in earlier in the year in Berlin, the mid-season invitational with the Direwolves, there was 127 million people watching one game. That's yep. peak concurrence, which makes it, next to the Super Bowl, is one of the biggest views event, annual events out there. Admittedly, a lot of those numbers are heavily skewed towards China, yep. which is one of the challenges when you try to boil it down to local numbers, but still we get a big audience in State of Origin at most of the international games we play, which is quite phenomenal when you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. If you did a list of the most viewed athletes in Australia for, you know, for 2018, your guys would be in it. It'd be right at the top of that tree for most of the Australian athletes, wouldn't they?
That's right.
And so, yeah, so that's the piece it's definitely the global piece that is definitely appealing. And so what's the next 12 months, 2 years look like for you as a group, you know, now with, you know, multiple teams, different players, you've got the High Performance Centre. What are the plans going forward?
So 12 months or 2 years is actually a lifetime in esports.
Oh, no,
so
completely.
It's just like that 2 years ago, I was just banging the drum, hey, everyone should be looking at esports and looked like a crazy person, whereas – now we're sitting in a huge facility in the City Greek Ground precinct. It's amazing how quickly things happened. I think the Money in Sport conference, where I actually probably first spoke to you about esports, that was in 2016.
Yeah, it was.
I think that was a game changer. So talking to a traditional sports audience and just putting those numbers up there and the lights that sort of flashed on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because Nick, who we've mentioned, and Daniel was on that same panel, and so were you, and you were spruiking the it's a lot like sports, and that was a bit that I saw. I went, you know, I saw esports then, and I still see it now as when. I started Sports Geek seeing the traditional sports happening thing and this whole digital thing that was happening. And I'm like, hey, guys, there's all these fans on digital. Yeah. And when I saw it, when, you know, you're explaining esports, I'm like, holy hell, they're already on digital.
Yeah.
More, you know, and they're more engaged in bigger volume and watching more stuff than any traditional sports fan. So I was like, oh, if you can connect the membership piece, the live ticketing piece, selling merch, you know, the things that traditional sports do really well. It's like tick, tick, tick. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, you know, what you've been doing the last 18 months is taking the sponsors along that journey.
Yeah. So at the moment we're our focus on actually using our teams to prove up models such as the membership platform. We've got emoji suites. We've got a lot of different commercialization pieces which we're applying to our teams and hopefully proving as a concept. And then our idea is actually to roll that out across the world of esports. We're looking at other geographies we can expand out into with things like the Esports High Performance Centre. We feel like we've got a model that can be replicated internationally.
Yep.
We're going through a capital raise at the moment. It's a really exciting space that people getting to look into. So hopefully we'll have a bit more dry powder to apply to projects. But I think from our dream is to be globally competitive, and that's our vision. And we feel like we can take Australian esports athletes in, again, inverted comments, to be competitive at the global level. A lot of it has been obviously doing our own thing, but trying to rally the ecosystem around us. And with so many traditional sports players and brands starting to get in, I think as a region, we can actually become a leader.
So in the esports space, like if we look at, you know, traditional sports, whether it's, you know, rugby or AFL or soccer, there's like an NGO, national governing body that's sort of trying to promote grassroots and run out programs like, you know, AusKick or Milo Cricket, depending on what it is. Who's doing the player development in the esports space?
So that's one of the challenges of esports is the value chain is so convoluted and there's so many different players. So I'm a founding board member on the EGAA, the Esports Games Association of Australia.
Yep.
And what we're trying to set it up as a very much a membership-based, bottom-up representative body, which is important because there's a lot of challenges on the horizon and government or whoever may want to speak to people on various issues.
Yep.
And it'd be great if we can have a degree of self-regulation and even though it's very hard to enforce things, it's codes of conduct that members are signing up to give both brands and regulators that comfort that there is some sort of stability there because you don't want to sort of draw the focus here, but things like gambling integrity and all these issues that traditional sports face, esports is going to face too as it becomes bigger and bigger. So it's really important from our point of view to be on the front foot when it comes to these things.
And so is it pretty much from a how does a gamer become an athlete? Is that just a matter of
So we try and build the narrative a lot of the time that anyone can become an esports star, but actually when you get into the science of it, these guys, just like a rugby league player, may have a Pacific Islander heritage, which gives him certain physical traits.
Yep.
These guys have cognitive traits that actually set them well beyond your common person, I guess. So one of the PhD candidates at the moment is doing his thesis on what are the key indicators of elite esports performance.
Yep.
So at the moment, the thing is people don't actually know what makes these guys so good. So yep. By identifying that, we can work out if it's nature, how can we identify and recruit for it, or if it's nurture, how can we train these people to, yep. to get better at it? And people always think it's how fast you can click buttons, but the research, particularly in some games, is it's more about your working memory and
decision making
under pressure. And it's the same as traditional sports, that the best traditional sports players in the world can close their eyes at any moment and tell you where every person on the field is and where they're going, and that helps them plan those 2-3 steps ahead. And it's exactly the same in some of these games.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw that in the NBA Finals press conference where someone asked LeBron about something in the sixth minute and he just rattled off the next 8 plays.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's a basketball-level genius of him being able to remember every play where everyone was, where they were, and that's why he made that split-second decision. It's having those skill sets to be able to apply in the gaming space as well.
Yeah.
But you can still play and play and play and get better. It's the same as getting out there, shooting as many hoops as possible, and eventually you'll be a good shooter.
Exactly, exactly. Although we try to put a lot more structure around it because there are kids just sitting here playing 15 hours straight and thinking by osmosis that they're trying to get better. So a lot of what we do is actually you play a game, but then it's actually what you do after that. The reviewing it, what do you do well, what do you do poorly, what are you going to do differently next time? And it's actually putting those learning principles in place and actually getting the right environment, so you're getting the maximum learning improvement out of each game rather than the quantity of games people are playing.
And is there, in the same way as traditional sports, is there that layer of stats and analysis that we're seeing, you know, the money ball side of things, I guess, we're seeing in different sports? Is that either starting to creep into esports, or do you see that on the horizon?
So it's the opposite problem. I was chatting to one of the Premier League clubs when I was over in UK recently, and they see it as an amazing opportunity to work with complete data sets, because in traditional sports, you're working with incomplete data sets. You've got Prozone and various tools, but in esports, absolutely everything is recorded. So you have too much data, and the challenge is actually sifting through that data to draw out actionable insights, I guess, that actually change what you do day to day. And no one's actually nailed it. So it's a very cool big data problem to actually boil it down to something that can actually make a difference when you're trying to make a second decision, which is effectively on instinct. How can you actually train people to think differently?
But that's sort of where things like machine learning and stuff, someone can say, well, we're going to apply our theories and our algorithms to this to come back and potentially, you know, if not auto-coach, but effectively come back with these recommendations because all that data's there.
Yeah, the challenge for the geeks used to be to beat a grandmaster in chess. Now the challenge is actually try and beat some of these games in these players in some of these games. I know in Dota, they beat someone one-on-one, and you can sort of do that. But when it comes to the interaction of 5 players, they haven't got to the point where they can actually, an AI can beat a traditional team at the moment. So, it'll be interesting to on that front.
But whether it's used as a coaching tool or review or that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So before we finish up, where can people find the Direwolves and all the teams and those kind of things?
We've actually got the Direwolves Twitter handle now. So we used to be Direwolves GG. Now we're at Direwolves, which is very cool.
Did you steal it off Jon Snow or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah, we took down HBO. So on Facebook, on our website, again, direwolves.gg. But you can tune to Twitch, watch us live. It's quite funny that in most sports, I think Twitter is becoming a smaller part of it, but in esports, Twitter is where it all lives at the moment. So, you're following the teams, Direwolves, Sydney Drop Bears, Superstellar on Twitter is the best way to keep up to date. But they're also looking at the league websites. So, Riot Games website, the OPL, is a good spot for your one-stop league information.
Yeah, I mean, the feedback of Twitter, and especially as Twitter moves to sort of media and live streaming, and this is where I get it, and it's easy to do. Everyone I talk to in esports is still, you know, Twitter is at it where it is, where all the conversation happens. Again, still happening in live sports and stuff, but the I guess the tight-knit community, what I remember in like 2009, 2010 Twitter that I remember, that's still happening in esports.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, if you want to dive in, it's pretty easy to sort of just start falling down that esports rabbit hole on Twitter and start following different people.
That's right. And then, for the broadcast of APL, twitch.tv/APL, 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday, the broadcast starts in.
Terrific, terrific. I want to finish with the Sports Geek closing five. And I remember that normally I tell people, and I've given you this without warning, but if you do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
That's a very good question. I grew up in Victoria, it would have been an AFL game. The AFL being very smart at capturing people young, they put in a pie night at our local footy club, and then paid for a bus down to the from the country down to the city to an AFL game. I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't Collingwood where I support.
Oh, okay.
Waverley, which shows how old I am.
Probably Waverley. I remember going to Waverley. Now a defunct stadium.
Yeah.
You've been to a few sports events. Is there a favourite food memory at a sports event? Something crazy that you've eaten, or is there a go-to food that you have at a sports event when you're there?
That's a very good question. Actually, working at a governing body level, that was one of the problems, that there probably wasn't enough memorable moments on the food front. But I think when you go over to the US, just the ostentatiousness of how big the meat-along hot dogs and all that are, it is,
Is there a go-to food in the esports community?
No, it doesn't live up to the stereotype as far as it's not Coke and Doritos. But actually, what I really love, I'm a member at the MCG, and the Jim Stein Grill in there, absolutely phenomenal, the best steak I've had anywhere in the world. And I love the MCG as far as a number of times I go in there without watching a ball played, and you can actually have a good night out there. It's they do it very well. So I'd say the Jim Stein Grill.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
Twitter. Unless there's a scandal going on, then Reddit. But
esports, what has it first? Reddit or Twitter?
Reddit is where it all gets broken. Aggregated. When something comes to the top of Reddit, you know it's something that's steering the community up, which is a good thing and a bad thing. It's great to be on the front page of Reddit as long as it's for the right reasons.
Exactly. Is there someone that you suggest that you suggest to the listeners they should follow and why, whether it's someone you're following online on Twitter or someone you've read recently?
Manny Anelka for esports. He's always got some interesting coming out with stuff coming out with his stuff. Beyond that, I actually sort of follow people well outside the esports sphere, trying to draw upon ideas from all over the place.
Because when you're so inside a bubble that is esports, it could be all you see for a lot of the times if you don't pop your head out occasionally.
Exactly. But, the Esports Observer is another one within the group. But, I love my hashtag sportsbiz and actually just, scroll through some interesting thoughts from interesting people.
Because that's the thing, and the ability to take from, in your case, still traditional sports, or what's happening in the live event space, what music's doing, what are they happening in festivals. Like you said, there's going to be a lot of similarities between what the Aussie Open do from a festival and the Esports Open. So I think you probably answered, but I'll ask it anyway. What social media platform, and I'll ask it for two, but is your MVP, and I'm going to answer it as Dave personally, and then from the Direwolves point of view.
I think obviously Twitter is where the community is, but we're actually trying to move more on to Facebook to really try and engage the mass market, the broader reach. So I think from a Direwolves point of view, it's both Twitter and Facebook. From my personal point of view, and this is probably a bit controversial, I think we need to actually take control of the relationship with our fans back and control of our own data back. And so I think there's really room to build your own bespoke platforms. Obviously, for the mass reach, you're still going to need social media, but if you can actually engage with fans on your own platforms, such as the membership program, the websites we're building, I think that's going to be the key going forward, because at the moment, too much power is going to the platform.
Oh, completely. I mean, there's that. I'm sort of waiting for a league or a team to sort of I guess, stand up and say, we're going to send our content here. We've sort of seen a little bit with some of the Premier League teams, sort of with Dugout and that sort of saying we're sending, but they're sort of enticed back by the big reach and the big numbers.
Yep.
I think it'll probably come a little bit about as more teams go down the OTT path. Mm-hmm. If they go, oh, we've got our own channel. This is where our channel is.
Yep.
And we're getting $10 a month or $20, whatever we're getting, and it's revenue.
Mm.
I think that's going to be interesting to see how the social media platforms are used. Are they used to tease? Because I don't think that at the moment the model of, oh, we're going to tease, but come here, here's our paywall, that hasn't worked.
No.
But what is going to be the model that works? And do you want to reach, you know, do you want to talk to your 50 million people or do you want to get, you know, $50 off a million people? Like it just becomes what business model works. And I don't think sports or esports has really figured that out yet, but, you know, are the social media platforms going to be part of that solution or not is definitely part of the equation.
Yes. Whoever cracks the conundrum is going to be a very rich person.
Yep. Or they might already be a rich person. They just might become richer.
Yes. Probably most likely.
How can people find you, connect with you on the internet?
Twitter, I'm at Dave Harris Oz. I'm trying to think whatever platforms are best. From there you can reach my others, but feel free. I'm happy to people shoot email at any time. Any questions, dharris@guineverecapital.com. You can work out how to spell it. It's all yours.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good thing about doing that. But we'll have a link to your Twitter and LinkedIn and all those in the show notes. So thanks very much for coming to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Join sports executives from around the world at sportsgeeknation.com.
Thanks again to Dave Harris. You can send him a tweet. As he said there, Twitter is most active. It is a very active community in the esports space. Dave Harris Oz, A-U-S, is how you can tweet him. Send him a tweet. Tell him you've listened. Ask him a question about esports. He has done a phenomenal job in the Asia-Pacific market in helping educate the market about esports, especially the traditional sports market, and having people asking, how does it work? What's it like? What are the different games? How does it all fit together? And I think I'm very much in line with Dave's thinking of the opportunities that professional sports offers esports. So send him a tweet, Dave Harris, AUS, or message him in the Sports Geek Nation Slack. Dave is also there, part of one of the reasons there is a really active esports channel in the Slack community. Sports Geek Nation is now live. You would have heard me talk about it in the last couple of weeks. Sportsgeeknation.com is where you can go to sign up. Thank you very much to the people who signed up in the pre-launch phase, our foundation members. It's a little bit strange. I'm recording this before we've closed, before we've actually launched and closed the pre-launch sort of foundation membership. But I've been super humbled and it's awesome to see the enthusiasm from people who have signed up. And they're really excited about where the community will go. For those of you who are listening for the first time, welcome. What is Sports Geek Nation? Well, Sports Geek Nation is a community of like-minded sports business executives that want to share and learn and collaborate and help grow this industry, whether it be in the digital space, the esports space, the technology space. So we've got a Slack community. We've also got a Facebook community. If you haven't joined the Facebook community, you can do so by going to sportsgeeknation.com/Facebook group. I'll be doing monthly Q&A videos. We're taking questions from the Slack and Facebook groups, talking about latest trends and things that I'm seeing. Also, there'll be a monthly email for Sports Geek Nation insiders on potentially what you missed, driving you back to the channels that are causing a bit of chatter, what potential jobs. It's a really active jobs channel. And also starting to profile some of the members to help those connections be made. We've got guests, we've got members signing up from all over the world, and I think that's the, I think I mentioned it, it's almost like a sports business United Nations, the fact that we've got people joining in from all over the world. So it's really good to get different perspectives, both from a different sports, different
different areas of sports, whether it be NGOs, leagues, teams, minor leagues, brands that are trying to activate into sport. And as a yearly member, if you sign up as a yearly member, you'll get the bonuses of all the free guides. We've got one on Facebook data, one on campaigns, as well as all the keynotes that I present. Once you can just go into your memberful account and click downloads, and they'll all be there and they'll be added as I present them. So thanks again for people, recent people who signed up. Ben Kennings from Surfing New Zealand, Angela Banbury from Netball Victoria, Stuart Martin from Edinburgh Rugby, Thomas Buring, and again, Thomas, if I've said your name wrong, please send me a Slack message admonishing me. He's from the Aalborg Pirates in the ice hockey space. John Barr, a good friend of mine I've known for a long time, has been one of the driving forces behind the NHL push into Seattle. So I'm really pleased to see the success he's had in the last couple of months with the announcement. And also just recently, Doug Mann from the VRC. So they're just some of the people that have signed up, and it's my way of saying thanks for those who want to sign up. If you've got a question or wondering what it's like, please send me an email, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com or go to sportsgeeknation.com to check out Sports Geek Nation and how it may help you develop your career, meet some really cool people, share some insights. That's pretty much the goal. That's pretty much what it has been for nearly the last 2.5 years. What has really fired me up is what is the feedback from the people who've already signed up and where they want to take it. Looking at things like new channels that they want to drive, potential meetups, those kind of things. So I'm really excited about the chatter that's happening in the group already, especially from the foundation members, and where it can go. So I'd love to see you in there. Go to sportsgeeknation.com. I'm recording this, obviously, 6 or 7 days out from heading to the States for yet another Sports Geek trip. You can follow along with the hashtag Sports Geek Trip. My first stop will be SEAT for SEAT Conference in Dallas. Super, looking forward to running the Digital Dollars workshop. It'll be a 50-minute format. It'll be super fast-paced. I ran through it earlier this week with one of my panelists and former guests, Jesper Nyholm. We sort of bounced around a few different ideas around how we're going to do it. Yes, I'm really excited about that. It'll be on Monday at 2 p.m. If you're at SEAT, I'd love you to come along to that session. And I'm sure between myself, Jane Busman-Wise from the Red Bulls, Jesper, as I said, from Team Denmark, and Zach Monette from Team Novo Nordisk, I think we're going to have a really fun session and really potentially challenge people on what they're doing for their particular audiences, what they're doing in the content space, the whys and wherefores around the platforms that they're using from a social media point of view, and what's hot, how they can look at that from a sales point of view, and pretty much look at what the sales process is, how do they value what they do, and how do they wrap it all up in a pitch. So that'll be my first couple of days in Dallas. Then, as I said earlier, I'll be heading to Philadelphia for Podcast Movement. So I'll be there from the 24th to the 26th. And then I'm looking to that Friday night, Friday the July 27th. I'm going to look to form a meetup and try to catch up with people in the Philly area. So I'm going to reach out to a few people this week that I'm already connected with, some that are in the Slack, some people I've already been talking to via email, find a place and organise a meetup on Friday, July 27th. So send me a tweet or message me on all the platforms that I'm available. If you're in the Philly area and would like to catch up, and then I'll be spending the week in New York from July 28 to August 5. And I'm currently setting up some meetings and some interviews, but I really want to ask you, my audience, who should I interview? Who should I catch up with? Who do you want me to talk to? Who do you want to hear from? So if you've got a nomination or a contact or a colleague or someone that you think will provide value to the audience, please let me know. I'd love to catch up with people working in the space. Obviously, there's a lot of head offices and super talented people in the New York area. I'm already connecting with a bunch of people that I know, but I'm more than happy also to hear from an interview out of the blue that I might not know or might not be connected with. So send me a tweet, connect us, hit me up on LinkedIn who should I interview in the New York area. And then I'm finishing off the trip, heading down to Washington to do a workshop with the Redskins on a project we're currently working on. And then August 7, I'll be lucky enough to have a little bit of time in LA and hope to lock in a few, one or two interviews there and catch up with some friends before I fly back. And the reason I'm flying back is, why not fly back for another conference? The Sports Analytics Conference is on in Melbourne on August 10. And I'm going to be doing the digital to dollars as a keynote. So running through what we will be doing at the seat conference in a workshop format, but I'll be doing it in a keynote format. And the good thing is I'll be taking, I guess, the feedback of what people said in the workshop and some of the trends that I will definitely garner post-workshop in talking to people. I'll embed that freshness into that keynote. So if you're going to be in Melbourne around August 10, please reach out. Let me know. If you have not yet got a ticket, you can use the code SportsGeek20, SportsGeek20 for 20% off. But if you are a Sports Geek Nation member, please DM me. I might be able to do a better offer than that. But if you do want to get a ticket, SportsGeek20 for 20% off. That's it from me for this episode. As I said, I'll be traveling over the next couple of weeks. If I'm in your part of the world, please reach out. Dallas, Philadelphia, New York, Washington, LA, and then Melbourne. If I'm in your part of the world, please reach out. Until next time, until I'm actually looking at you and seeing you, because I haven't seen you for a while, my name is Sean Callinan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callinan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.